Working Cows Podcast, Episode 68.
Welcome to the podcast that gives producers a platform to discuss and share paradigm-challenging practices. Practices that have increased the effectiveness of their operation and the joy that their families have received from this lifestyle.
Howdy, everybody. It's Clay Connery, host of the Working Cows Podcast, brought to you by the Global Ag Network. Excited to have on the show today Steve Kenyon. Steve is a guy up in Alberta, Canada, doing some really interesting things, custom grazing on leased land. We've talked to him before about natural parasite control, and today we're going to talk to him about another paradigm-challenging practice, and that is bale grazing. Now, we've already talked about the benefits of bale grazing, but today we're going to talk about the waste, quote-unquote, scare quote, waste of bale grazing. Before we jump in with Steve, I do want to encourage you to stick around after the show. I've got a special request for you, so please stick around after the show and we'll talk about what I'm going to ask you to do. I want to jump right in here and talk to Steve Kenyon about this topic of bale grazing. So Steve, thanks for joining me today on the Working Cows Podcast. I invited you on to discuss your recent article in the Canadian Cattlemen, the Beef Magazine, and you have an article there called Bale Grazing, What a Waste of Feed, and then your answer to that exclamation is no. So thank you for taking the time to join me today.
Glad to be here. You betcha.
So I guess, first of all, we'll start off with the major question that came to my mind as a result of reading this episode. You talk about the whole point of bale grazing in your mind, or the major benefit of bale grazing in your mind is that you are capturing more water, that you're able to capture more water. And you make a statement in there that, in your mind, fertility doesn't always equal water holding capacity. Can we talk a little bit about that?
Yes, you bet. For years, I've been bale grazing. I think I started bale grazing in 1999. And back then, I was thinking about the fertility, all that manure that gets left out there and the urine that gets, you know, passed through the cow and into the frozen ground and it stays there in the ground instead of going through a manure hauling process out of a corral system and a lot of that nutrients being volatilized off and running off into our, you know, water systems or just off the land. And it really started to show after years of doing this that I don't think it's the fertility that is the big benefit, right? Yes, there's a bunch of nitrogen and phosphorus and, you know, other nutrients that come in with those bales and, you know, through the cow and onto the land. But I've come to realize that the water holding capacity is the number one tool that I'm getting out of bale grazing. Honestly, if you can get the water, you can get the nutrients, right? You get the water in the soil, then the microbes show up, the plants grow, the soil organisms, the mycorrhizae, fungi, and bacteria can get you the nutrients, right? But we need the water there to allow them to survive. So, yes, bale grazing brings in a lot of fertility, but it can be used up. Right, I can feed on a piece of property, and I've done this side by side, two different paddocks, bale grazed on one, and then unrolled bales on another. Right, made them clean up really well, but it got to the point where it was filthy, dirty. Right, you didn't want to unroll another bale out there because there was so much manure. You know what? Years down the road, that bale grazing field will always outproduce the one that I unrolled on, because it's got the extra material that was left behind and gave it the water holding capacity, right? The fertility you add gets used up unless you create an environment that the soil organisms can start creating their own nutrients, right? Bringing in nitrogen and allowing those plants to grow, get the whole system back in order, and it starts with managing for water holding capacity.
Right, and we talked in episode 36, you and I, on your last appearance on the Working Cows Podcast, about natural parasite control and about how some of the things that we would use, dewormers and different things, are a detriment to soil health, and that soil health is directly connected to water holding capacity. So when you talk about fertility, you're talking about the nitrogen, the phosphorus, the potassium, those things getting returned. And then when you're talking about that as something different than soil health, is that right?
Yeah, soil health is everything, right? Mostly it is the, how do I describe it normally, is the polyculture of plants gets you a polyculture of root systems, which will get you a polyculture of soil organisms. You get a variety of different critters under there. They're going to be getting different nutrients for you, pulling it out of the soil, pulling it out of the air. We've got to get that whole system, because nowhere in nature do you see a nitrogen deficient plant. Okay, we only see that in agriculture, where we have nitrogen deficiencies. Nature figures that out on its own. Right? We've got water holding capacity, we've got the soil organisms to get that. And then we don't have nitrogen deficiencies. So we need to get our systems built back up, mimicking what nature does. We don't need to add fertility. Like I said, the water is the most important nutrient. I heard a comment from a presenter one time. I'll get the numbers close here. I'm sure it's not 100% accurate. But if you've got a crop of forage that you're growing and your soil test calls for 50 pounds of nitrogen to get, you know, X number of pounds of forage on your per acre. Equivalent to 50 pounds of nitrogen, you need about 10,000 pounds of water. Right? It just kind of hits you. That's a pretty big difference. So water is the most important nutrient you should be managing.
Absolutely. So the topic or the idea of this article that will be linked at the show notes page, workingcows.net/68. The show notes page for today is workingcows.net/68. There'll be a link to Steve's article there. The concept is that you aren't wasting this feed, and that is one of the common questions that came up from my private Facebook group. The people that are in there were wanting to know about the waste, and you have a paragraph here in your article says there is no such thing as wasted feed as long as it is wasted in the right place. Pasture production will double or triple more over the next 5 to 10 years with added water holding capacity. So could you just burst that bubble about wasting the feed or maybe talk about the right places to waste it?
Yeah, I mean, we're assuming in this scenario that any other type of feeding has 0% waste, which we know is not true, right? Everything has a little bit of waste. But when we're bale grazing, if we're getting, you know, 5 to 10 to 15% waste, I'm quite okay with that, right? Because that 5 to 10 to 15%, maybe you can look at that as instead of waste on the ground, it could be, you know, 5 to 10 to 15% more water holding capacity next year, right? I used to have a number, I came up with it years ago, about for every day I'm feeding livestock on my land with imported hay, so it can't be feed that you've made on your own land, it's imported hay, there's a 30 cents per head per day value that comes into your land. Basically, just to make the numbers easy, if your feed cost for one cow is a dollar a day, just to use simple numbers, so your cow herd has to pay $1 to bring in feed to feed one cow for a day. 30 cents of that is charged out to the grazing profit center. Okay, so basically your cow feed cost now dropped to 70 cents per day, and your grazing profit center has to pay 30 cents per head per day in, you could call it fertility value or improved soil, you know, value, whatever you want to call it. But there's definitely a value that gets transferred there, because if it's fed in the right place, then there's a big benefit to your pastures. And for many years, right? I've had some bale grazing trials going. I think the longest one I've got is about 15 years right now. And they're back to probably being even, the control versus the bale grazing field. But for the first 5 years, the bale grazing field was way further ahead in production. From, you know, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 years, they were still ahead, but the control was actually getting better because of the grazing management as well. So what the bale grazing did to improve that land in 1 year, the rotational grazing took 10 years to get it to there. to about the same level. So I really think it's the building of the water holding capacity, because the fertility, you know, that urine and manure that was put there on year one, it's gone, right, by year 10. But the whole system is built up enough so that it's producing its own nutrients.
In your mind, is the water holding capacity attributed to the fact that it's slowed down as the rain falls on the hay that's left laying there, that it's slowing down much like litter does, or what is that in your mind? What's that attributed to?
It's doing a couple of things. First, the litter sitting on top is reducing runoff. So when raindrops come down and hit bare soil, causes soil capping, which means the next raindrops coming down can't penetrate through the soil and they end up running off. Okay, so you lose water from runoff. So leaving that litter on there is going to help reduce your runoff. Instead, the raindrops are going to come down, hit the plant material, disperse into fine particles, and then soak into the ground. So that's one. Two, water holding capacity is going to increase because we're going to slow evaporation. Okay, so the water that once it gets into the soil, if we can have it covered, it's going to reduce the amount of evaporation. You know, when it's windy out and the sun's beating down on everything, that trash layer or litter layer, just like if you leave an extra litter when you're grazing, is going to help reduce the evaporation, so you're not losing as much off your soil. And then a third way, I guess, is as that stand gets better, because of the water holding capacity, even because of the nutrients to begin with, the plants are going to get stronger, their roots are going to get stronger. And as your roots are growing, you allow them to grow out, they're putting sugars into the soil. It emits sugars out the root tips and basically glues the soil particles together, adding organic matter in through the root systems, right? Which basically you're adding organic matter there, which is water holding capacity. You basically turn your soil into a sponge that can hold onto the water. So I guess there's three ways that you're building water holding capacity.
Very good. So I keep forgetting to mention this. We have talked about bale grazing before on a very early episode of the Working Cows podcast with Paul Youngnich. We talked about his master's thesis on episode 5, so that'll be linked at the show notes page as well. WorkingCows.net/68 is our show notes page today. We'll have a link to Paul Youngnich's master's thesis, and that was focused mostly on comparing the benefits of bale grazing to the benefits of feeding with like a bale processor, and then also the ultimate control of that was feeding in a feed yard and the soil health benefits of all three of those types, or detriments, if you will. So I just wanted to mention that. I also was thinking about, as I was thinking about doing this episode with you, and as I've thought about bale grazing in my own operation, I was wondering about, and this goes back to your mention of the polyculture of healthy soil, I was wondering about the weed pressure that comes as a result of bale grazing. How do you think about that, and what are some things that maybe should be considered as we look at bale grazing? What should we be aware of so that we're not surprised, maybe?
Okay. Weed management has nothing to do with bale grazing. Okay. My opinion, weed management is a summer grazing issue that you need to deal with. Okay. Whether the weeds come in from bale grazing, whether they come in from the neighbor's yard, a truck driving by, wherever those seeds come from, honestly, they're probably already in the soil. Every square foot of soil has 4,000 to 5,000 seeds in it already. If you have weeds in your field, then it's a summertime growing issue that you need to manage, right? Managing it correctly with a good graze period, good rest period, you know, increase your stock density and get good animal impact out there. It really has nothing to do with bale grazing, right? Yes, some seeds could come in, but as long as you're grazing well in the summer, you're managing good in the summer, it shouldn't be an issue, right? I do not worry about anything coming in with my bale grazing because my summer grazing takes care of that. Right. If you're going to bale graze out on a pasture and then just continuously graze for the summer, well, yeah, you're going to get weeds from all over the place, not just from the bale grazing. You're not dealing with the problem. The problem is the land is not managed correctly. So if you're managing properly, you shouldn't have to worry about any weeds coming in with your bale grazing. because that's a summertime issue, not a winter bale grazing issue.
We have talked about training cows to eat weeds as well with Kathy Voth, workingcows.net/34. It'll be in the show notes page too, but I just wanted to get that out of the way because it was a question in my mind. Steve, I'd just like to take a moment quickly and thank the amazing supporters that I have on Patreon. We've got Ryan and Bridger and Jerry and Carson. Those guys are great guys. Really appreciate their support, as well as Derek and Daniel and Dustin and Kyle. Thank you guys so much for your support through Patreon. A lot of the questions that I'm asking Steve today have come from this private Facebook group and from people who support the show on Patreon. So head on over to patreon.com/workingcows or workingcows.net/support to check out ways that you can support the Working Cows podcast. Now back to Steve. I would like to continue this discussion about the how-to of bale grazing. We've talked about the soil health benefits with you and with other people, but how do you actually go about setting up those paddocks, and what is kind of the design and the layout of the bales? So let's start with the cows to bale ratio and how that works in your mind.
Okay, well, there's lots of ways to skin a cat, right? What it comes down to is there's two reasons why I bale graze. First one is to lower my labor and equipment costs. Okay, so however you set up your bale grazing, that's the main reason I'm doing it, is to lower my costs. Second reason is because then I get all the added benefits, the water holding capacity and the fertility. So as long as those two criteria, pass the test, doesn't matter how you set it up or how many cows to the ratio. Every farm is different. Every farm has its own advantages and its own disadvantages. So I don't ever try and tell somebody exactly how to do their bale graze, but they need to make sure that they're covering those. I've seen people who bale graze, it looks exactly the same amount out in the field, but they lost money at it because they didn't understand the economics with the labor and the equipment usage. They handled the bales way too often. They didn't quite understand the idea behind it. So generally, when I set up a bale grazing field, there's a couple different ways to do it. First way, all the bales get delivered right out to my pasture. Okay, they never hit my hay yard. Even if I haven't finished grazing that field yet for the fall, I'll still take the bales and try to get them unloaded right where they're supposed to be. Now, I can have a self-unloading truck that dumps them in the field, and then I just have to spread them. Or I've actually hired people, they bring them with a tractor and a wagon, and they unload them and set them right where I want them, trying to lower that labor and equipment cost. If I've got to pay $5 or whatever, $7 a bale to get them delivered, then I might as well have them put right where they're supposed to be. So trying to get that yardage cost down is a main priority for me. Number of animals per bale. Depends how big the bales are. I want to make sure everybody has enough bunk space. And I want to give my preference is about a 3 to 5 day graze period. I find that's a nice balance between, keeping that feed waste down. I know we just talked about not having any waste, but a lot of people are going to argue this point anyway, so I better throw it in here. It's a nice balance between waste, labor, and cow nutrition. Cow nutrition, the reason I say that is if you were to limit feed, because I do, with my bale grazing, I still limit feed, right? They only get enough feed for the certain number of days. And if they run out soon, then I push them and make sure they clean up really well. But you want to have enough bunk space that everybody has access most of the time. So let's say we had a 4 day graze period on a set of bales. On the first day, every cow has access to a bale, right? That poor doing, non-aggressive cow is standing at a bale all by herself. She's got lots of access. If you limit feed, let's say you went out with a bale shredder and you put 30 pounds per head per day or whatever out on the ground, the boss cow always gets too much and that poor doer always gets not enough, right? So she ends up being a skinny at the end of the year that you get rid of. With bale grazing, I don't have that issue because that skinny cow is sitting in a bale all by herself for the first 2 days. And then the last 2 days, then everybody's cleaning up. So we actually get a better cow nutrition, I think, with a 3 or 4 day ration. What was your other question?
I think you pretty much covered that one so far. We're going to keep going on this kind of how-to theme here. About when would you be looking to get bales delivered?
Well, whenever it works out for the farmer. I mean, I've had them delivered in September, all the way up until January. Another way that I've done bale grazing before. So the first version, we put all the bales out there, basically a checkerboard across the field. And then we use a strip grazing fence and graze down through the bales. So we only give them access to, 3 or 4 days worth of time. The other way that I've done it is I've had a hay supplier that was fairly close by. He delivered with his tractor and wagon. The one farmer was delivering 28 bales at a time. I've had a few different versions, but that was one of them. So he would basically put 28 bales in each one of my paddocks. So I already have a summer grazing cell design for a pasture, and he would put 28 bales in this paddock and 28 bales in that paddock and probably hit 5 or 6 different paddocks. And then all I have to do is go out and take the twine off. And then every 4 days you open a gate. So the cows graze through each paddock and the bales are set out there. Now, when we just about run out, we're on the last paddock. I just phone him up and say, whenever you've got time, you can, fill up all the other paddocks again. So he will, at his leisure, probably he's got 4 days leeway. He'd fill up all the other paddocks again and bring them throughout the winter. So, like I said, there's more than one way to do this. As long as you are remembering to keep your yardage and equipment costs down and keeping that water holding capacity and or fertility out on the pasture, right? That's the key to bale grazing. Every farm's different. Maybe you live in a warmer climate and your winters, the ground's not frozen all the time. Well, that can definitely do some damage to the soil. They're out there in the mud punching it out. Yes, I've seen that. I've had that here for, a month worth of warm weather in the winter. Have a sacrifice area. Have another place to go. You don't have to do the same thing all winter long. If your temperature changes, your climatic conditions change, then you adjust for it. Doesn't mean it doesn't work. It just means you have to adjust for the environmental conditions.
You mentioned twine and taking that off. Do you take it off when it's delivered? Do you wait till you're about to go in to take it off? What are your practices there?
Preferred when it's delivered, right? Twine or net wrapping comes off a lot easier when it's not frozen, right? We get a lot of snow and cold weather over here, so if I can get all that twine off when it's nice, it just saves a lot of time because it comes off a lot easier, right? You can pull 30 or 40 bales an hour. In the fall, but in the wintertime, you're down to 10 or 15 bales an hour just because everything's frozen and a lot slower.
And the timeline of the actual grazing, when do you usually start bale grazing? When are you usually done? Is that different from year to year?
Yeah, it varies depending on situation. How late did my dormant season grazing go? Did I have any stockpiled for next spring? Are we swath grazing anything? Did we get any crop residues, right? It all varies. So every year is different. It all comes down to economics and finance.
Are you bale grazing the same pastures every year? Are you using bale grazing to kickstart fertility on new pastures some years? How does that work?
I try and, bale graze on the land that needs it the most. I've actually set it up now when I pick a bale grazing field, I'll do it for 2 years. But I'll actually leave my rows farther apart. That way I have less pressure on my electric fence. So if you basically, I guess I set it up, bales are about 25 to 30 feet apart, but my rows will be 50 to 60 feet apart. So if you can picture that in a field. Mm-hmm. And then the next year, I'll do the same paddock, do the same field, but then I'll just fill in the holes, right? So now we'll go the same direction, but we'll fill in the gaps and cover that ground in between. Just makes it a little easier with moving the electric fence. There's not as much pressure. Nobody's bumping into it, or it's not quite so tight in there. So normally I bale graze on a paddock 2 years in a row, but we only cover the ground once.
That makes sense. What about the quality of hay that you're getting? Does this give you an opportunity to purchase lower quality hay for a lower price, or how does that play in your mind?
Oh, every year's different. I mean, if you've got depends what animals you're feeding, what the, you know, if you've got good quality hay or if you only have access to the poorer quality hay. It all depends on the year, right? It's so hit and miss. You got to do the numbers every year because it works out differently every year too, right? If you've got a younger class of livestock, you've got, you know, bred heifers or something that you're bale grazing, you might want some better quality feed. They clean up better if it's better quality or different palatabilities of feed. So, yeah, every year is a little bit different.
You mentioned in your article what you usually see being wasted. Can you talk a little bit about that, just to make sure that we've hit that waste issue enough times on this episode?
Sure. By weight, maybe there's more waste, and I'm going to put waste in quotation marks here just because I don't believe there is such a thing as waste, but the waste on a bale grazing is mostly stems. So by weight, yes, there might be more volume of litter left on the ground when you're done compared to another type of feeding. But I've unrolled bales. I've used a bale shredder before, and I believe in both those situations, especially the bale shredder on the ground, a lot of the leaves and the finer particles end up being in mixed in with a bunch of the waste. And that's the high-quality stuff, the nutrients that's good for the cattle. Whereas bale grazing, they seem to pick through that bale pretty good, and I'm not going to say they get all of it, but they get a good majority of that good, the fines. Like, they don't blow off in the wind. They don't fall through to the ground as much, even when I'm unrolling bales. You can tell a lot of those alfalfa leaves or clover leaves, they fall right to the ground, and the cows can't pick them up because they're the fines. In bale grazing, I think they get a good percentage of that fines they get to eat. And what's left over when you're kicking through it is a bunch of stems that are lower quality feed value.
When would you plan to return to a field you have bale grazed for summer grazing, or do you return to those every year, or how does that work?
Yeah, I just let it go in my rotation. I don't worry too much about it. I know I will get more production out of those fields for the next 2 years, so I might be able to get, maybe I'll plan to start there, knock it in, you know, any of those wasted dead spots that people complain about, a little bit of hoof action on that, we'll kick that into gear and get it breaking down. But really, I don't really bother. However it works in my rotation, I just graze it as it comes along.
Another one of the episodes I will mention is Johann Zietzmann mentioned that he's seen people doing this in even tropical and arid climates alike, just to kickstart that fertility and that soil health, as you said earlier as well. So it's a thing worth looking into no matter where you're at.
Yeah, well, regenerative grazing or regenerative management is about building soil. Even if you're under irrigation, right? You've got lots of water. You can pump all you want. Building up that soil and the water holding capacity, I think, is important. A couple of reasons. One, would you rather, you know, pump on 13 inches of water in a season or 25 inches of water in a season? Right? If your soil can hold on to it, you don't have to turn the pumps on as often. Also, your soil becomes more stable. Right? You're not going to be punching it out as much. Your equipment's not going to be getting stuck in the mud when it's really wet, because your soil is nice and solid and stable because you've built up that soil, the root mass. It's just generally a good practice to build your soil, right? It's our job as producers to build our soil. It doesn't matter where you are or what you're doing, that's our job.
I know that keeping overheads is a big deal for you, and I believe last time I was aware, you were running with basically just a pickup with a bale bed on it as the equipment that you have on your place, and that's what you use to spread those bales out. Is that right?
Yes. I've used bale trucks for many, many years. Haven't owned a tractor since I started farming. That being said, I don't want anybody to catch me off. A year and a half ago, I bought a backhoe. Now, I don't use it for much to do with a tractor. I think I've used the loader with the bale forks on it about twice in a year and a half. But I'm doing a lot of water construction, right? Dugouts and dams and improving water systems on my pastures with it. So technically, I don't own a tractor, but I did pick up a little backhoe.
Have we covered this pretty much, or is there more that you would like to say about this issue?
There's so much to cover on it. I mean, I've got all sorts of articles on bale grazing over the years. If anybody wants to go search for them, they're they're on the cattleman site too there, where you, you're linking the other one to it for sure. So.
Yep, we'll do that. And there's, I think there's some videos and other things as well out there that we could link to as well. And I'll do that at the show notes page, workingcows.net/68. I do want to give you the opportunity to share about any of the upcoming education opportunities you've got. I know that there's one in Denver, Colorado, February 11th and 12th. Anything else you'd like to say, or is there a place we should send them, or a place I can link to at the show notes page where people can see the upcoming things that you're going to be doing?
Yeah, we've actually got lots coming up. I'm going to have a busy winter here. Probably the easiest way to do it is go to my Facebook page, Greener Pastures Ranching, and I keep posting, you know, when events are, and there's tons of information there. If you scroll back on bale grazing and rotational grazing and everything, I try and keep that as an educational page for people. So by all means, that's where you'd go.
I will link to that as well, and I said it last time, I'll say it again, somebody really needs to do a study on your Facebook page and figure out how much money you could have saved someone by using some of the tips and tricks that you have there. So it's a really good page if you haven't liked it, if you're not following it, if you're not checking it often, because Facebook doesn't show you everything people post unless they pay for you to see it. If you're not checking it often, yeah, you're doing yourself a disservice. Check out Steve's Facebook page. It's very good.
Yeah, I've learned from a lot of mentors over my time, and it's a lot easier, I tell you, firsthand to learn from other people's mistakes than from your own. So I've made my fair share of mistakes here, so I'd gladly help people not make those same mistakes.
Steve, thank you so much for your time today.
You betcha.
So, my special request, here it is. I am nearing 1,000 likes on the Facebook page. I would appreciate it if you would share it with friends that don't like it. If you yourself don't like it yet, would you please go out and give it a like and share it with the one friend who you think would benefit from the content that we're putting out here at the Working Cows podcast and the discussions that we're trying to start through our Facebook page. So if you would share the Facebook page with one friend this week who might benefit from it, I would very much appreciate that. Maybe we can push it over that 1,000 likes limit. So that'll be a pretty cool milestone here at the Working Cows podcast. Coming up next week on the show, we are going to be talking with Roland Cruz and Patrick Toomey, recorded live in a storage closet in Buffalo, South Dakota, after their whole Holistic Management Roadshow, sponsored by the South Dakota Grassland Coalition and NRCS and Maya Grazing and a few others. So really excited about that conversation with them. Kind of an interesting time in the world of ranch consulting. Crossroads Ranch Consulting is in a transition phase, and ranch management consultants also at the end of their transition phase. So we're going to talk about all that with both of those leaders, and in the case of Crossroads Ranch Consulting, the leader and his apprentice, on the next 2 weeks of the Working Cows podcast, because for episode 70, we've got Dave Pratt coming back, and we're going to talk to him about owner value and some of the issues related to that, some of the bunny trails related to that. So look forward to the next couple weeks as we round out January with some national and international guests. So please tune in for next week with Roland Cruz and Patrick Toomey on the Working Cows podcast.
We invite you to visit workingcows.net to subscribe to the show via iTunes or Stitcher. You'll also find detailed show notes pages, resources from our guests, and the industry leaders who have influenced them. For more ideas on putting your cows to work for you in a more profitable way, tune in next week.